You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast with host Fifi Peters.
South Africa's government has walked away from a fight with the mining industry over the contentious once empowered, always empowered clause. Previously, government wanted mining companies to maintain a 26% black empowerment holding in perpetuity. This means that if former empowerment partners sold their shares, mining companies would have had to reissue new shares to meet the 26% threshold. We do have Tebello Chabana, Senior Executive of Public Affairs and a Transformation at the Minerals Council of South Africa, joining the market update to tell us what this means for the industry. Tebello, thanks so much for your time. So does the mining sector view this as government raising its white flag over this matter? And will this move help drive investments in the sector that were previously on ice because of policy uncertainty?
Government wanting to not appeal this judgment, i.e. and leave it as law, is positive in that it certainly does provide certainty on a very vexed issue in the mining context. Now, you will recall that now this is the third iteration of the mining charter. I think the first one came in around about 2004. So we've had mining companies, do BE deals, we know, way in excess of over 150 billion rands worth based on those mining charters, based on the way it was formulated and obviously in discussions with the DMRE. So when this misunderstanding relating to, what happens when the shareholders do sell, so when that misunderstanding appeared, it was very critical that we actually get it clarified. Well, one, firstly, you do want black investors, to realize some value. I mean, that's why they're in the business, to realize some value. But it was important that we get this clarity. And at that stage, Minister Ramaswamy agreed that we actually get this declaratory order. Subsequent to that, the department did change its mind on this, but we decided to still continue to get the clarity on, as you call it, once empowered, always empowered. Because as you can imagine, if investors do not understand the rules that are applicable, they will not invest. Mm. And that's been one of the challenges for mining, in that investors, current and future, were uncertain as to, well, if we do this BE transaction in good faith, it must have X consequences. If the DMRE wants to put in place a set of rules going forward that are clear, that are concise, and that provide clarity for future investors, so be it. But it's always important that the investors must know where they stand. Mm. If I do A, B, C, D, will it mean E or not?
So I understand that you or the Minerals Council had a talk, a discussion with the minister, Minister Mantashe, shortly after it was announced that government would no longer be challenging this case in the High Court. What did you guys discuss?
Look, I think firstly, you must understand that it was the minister on a public platform said, this was the Joburg Indaba, that he is unlikely to challenge the judgment. He made this announcement on the public platform. But now you can understand that prior to that, we had certainly sought to engage him and the DMRE to try to assure them that the industry will continue to transform. We are still committed to transformation. And certainly that is the strong message that we sent to the minister and his team. You need to look at it in context. We have known since 2004 that the policy, the mining charter, is policy. So the legal status of the charter for us hasn't changed. The judgment merely clarified it, right? So we've known since 2004. We've done the transactions based on the first and second iterations, and now the third iteration. Now you've had two courts confirm it. So it's been pretty clear to us, and it hasn't inhibited us from transforming in any way. So it was important that we provide that assurance to the regulator and others that we are still going to continue to transform, even though now we know the court has opined to make it clear that this is a policy instrument. Mm. It is a policy instrument that we welcome, by the way, that we support. you know, despite the challenges that we've had with some of the provisions.
You see, the issue is that a transformation hasn't gone far enough or wide enough in the communities, right? And so if you're saying that the sector is committed to transformation, what does that mean? I mean, how will you be doing things differently outside of this policy instrument that you are now abiding by, you know, as a result of having committed all these deals? But how will you be doing things differently such that we've got transformation that is trickling down the entire mining value chain?
Yeah. Now, I guess maybe where I disagree with you, I think that transformation has been trickling down this entire mining value chain. And you know, and I'll say to you why I think it has been happening. Mm. The fact that the industry has not been able to, on its own, totally transform the extent of the poverty and inequality, you know, joblessness that we have in the country, is not an indictment on the mining industry alone. We cannot do it alone as an industry. Now, what has the industry done? I mean, if you look at the transactions that have been affected by the industry, let's talk about a controversial issue, one, you know, producing black industrialists or black capitalists. Now, for one, I think it is an important endeavor. Okay, but you mustn't stop there. If you look there, and I say, you know, if you look at the top 20 richest black South Africans, 90%, you know, got their wealth from mining. Mm. If you look at the communities, the employee share ownership schemes that we've implemented, I mean, look at the Kumba one, where each employee got in excess of a million odd rand. You know, go to Trialogue. They produce a magazine, I think, and also online. The mining industry is the largest contributor to socioeconomic development year in, year out. No other sector of the economy contributes to their communities more than mining companies. Now, we do this through our social and labor plans, you know, so we are doing it. And maybe one last thing, you know, if you look at the average guaranteed monthly wage for entry level unionized mine workers in gold, platinum, and coal, and some of them don't have a matric. In 2020, they were earning between 19,000 rand to 25,000 rand per month. That's a guaranteed monthly wage for an entry-level worker. Mm. So the industry has even also transformed its wage, real wages, social wages. Now, has that been sufficient to radically change the fate of communities where there's mining, where there isn't mining, such as the labor sending areas? I don't think so. But can the industry do it on its own? No. I mean, if you go to, you know, mines tend to be in really far-flung places where the municipalities are poorer and what have you. I mean, the kind of monies that should be spent by government on social delivery, delivering services, putting in place mechanisms, you know, infrastructure so that other businesses can grow, can come to the grow and provide jobs. If government was doing that adequately, you know, communities wouldn't have this, wouldn't have to almost solely rely on, you know, this odd economic activity here and there of mining and, you know, one or two retail outlets in particular areas. So we can work with government as the mining industry. You know, we can be that catalyst for development, but we certainly cannot do it on its own. If you look at the monies that are returned to the fiscus by these municipalities, I mean, what we can spend as an industry is a drop in the ocean compared to what government should be doing in those communities.
Okay, point made. Just one last question. It looks like the government is looking at other ways to drive transformation. Any idea of what they could be?
We say this mining charter has been an effective instrument for driving transformation. I mean, that's our premise. That's our starting point. Now, the MPRDA, which is the framework legislation, has enabled government to make the content of the mining charter binding on mining companies. And it's important that people understand that. Mining companies, as we speak, have got mining rights, have got social and labor plans that are part of their license to operate. If they do not implement their social and labor plans, the DMRE can take action, they can sanction them, they can revoke their mining rights. So as it is, mining companies are very highly regulated to drive transformation. So a lot of people don't understand that context because you don't see it in any other sector of the economy, you know, not in retail, not in construction, not in the financial sector, to the extent that you have it in mining. So people tend to think that there's no legislative framework, especially for driving transformation in mining. So it's there, and it has been very effective. Mm. And the DMRE, though, has had, as a result of the MPRDA, the power to do other things, to put in place other instruments. So it's had these powers. The court confirmed that it's had these powers. So I know that the rest of society is waking up to this issue, but those powers have been there.
All right.
For some time.
All right, Debolo, we'll leave it there for now. So thanks so much for joining the show. Debolo Chabana, the Senior Executive of Public Affairs and Transformation at the Minerals Council of South Africa.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.